Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Tuesday, and a lovely one it is here in the hills and hollers of what's left of wild, wonderful, almost level West by God, Virginia. I thought this evening, well, we've got rather of a hodgepodge this evening. No, not really. It's just things don't always string together in that logical fashion that I rather like. But I wanted to get, you know what, I promised myself I was going to do this so that folks will, hey, what happened to Bob? Okay, let's go over this again. Beginning next week, it gets kind of weird, all right? I leave on the 7th of June, so I won't be behind the mic the 7th of June, the 8th of June, and probably not the 9th of June, definitely not the 10th of June. We'll be traveling to Washington, D.C., a number of us, in order to highlight the assault that has been going on against the Environmental Protection Agency and try to give them a little bit of backup, a little bit of support for their efforts, their lonely efforts, because they are the only agency in government that has been interested even remotely in helping the beleaguered citizens of Appalachia, subjected to the siege by the thugs of the coal industry. So the 7th, 8th, and 9th, that will be my world, and it'll keep me away from the microphone. Then the 10th, the Charleston, West Virginia premiere of Bobby Kennedy Jr.'s The Last Mountain will take place at the State Capitol Theater, or the Capitol Theater on Summers Street in Charleston, West Virginia, and we'll be there for that. So that takes up next week. Then, on Monday the 13th, we will take off for beautiful downtown Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Netroots Nation. That will keep us gone for about 7 days. We'll be back here on the 20th. No show on the 20th. Then, on the, so you can expect, shows on the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, and 24th of June, just as we will have shows on the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of June. Then, on the 28th, we'll have a show on the 27th. Then, on the 28th, Ferg and I head down to the campus of Concord University, where we will set up for what begins on the 29th of June, 29th, 30th, and 1st of June, 29th and 30th of June, 1st of July, will be the beginning of Dr. Bill O'Brien's PRISM West Virginia Summer Academy on the teaching of American history. These will be all-day sessions. They will be live on the Horn stream, and they will also be live on the Horn Ustream channel, with the videos saved for later viewing. The Summer Academy will continue in the month of July, picking up on the 5th of July, you know, long holiday weekend, the 4th of July weekend, the 1st, the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. The Summer Academy will pick back up on the 5th of July, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th, and then recommence on the 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th. And we'll be home and hopefully have a show on the 15th if there's still an audience for one. In other words, it is going to be a very busy time for a while. And I just wanted you to know that the schedule is going to be a little bit weird. It's not like the show's going away. And like I said, there will be programming to watch. There just won't be a nightly show all during the time of Dr. Bill's Summer Academy. So that's what the schedule is. And it is, of course, the 31st day of May. And with that in mind, I have to tell you that in order to complete May's fundraising, and frankly, because of the fact that I'm going to be gone during so much of June, the possibility of us raising the funds for June is approaching nil. Because I'm going to be gone so much of the time and won't be here behind the microphone to pitch and do my little NPR pledge drive thing, that tonight we need 46 people, $10 apiece, nifty, thrifty, 250, 46 people to complete May's fundraising and then just sort of cross our fingers about June. It would be great if we could come up with those 46 people. It would be wonderful. It would be magnificent. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. And there's also the snail mail address at 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB. It stands for Personal Mailbox 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. So there, that's what the schedule is. And then from July the 15th onward, we should be fairly normal, by the way. Normal's only a setting on a dryer. God knows it's not something that comes visiting here very often. I don't know. Maybe there'll be a vacation somewhere along the way. Or maybe I'll just sort of, we'll just sort of keep on John Henry in it. But that's what the schedule is, and if we could finish out May, because we've had, and it's never happened before in the history of the Horn, to have January, February, March, and April have 4 months where we actually completed the fundraising goal and actually had all the money necessary to pay all the bills. That's never happened. I would love it if we could make it 5 months in a row, but I recognize that getting 46 contributions in that amount of time is something approaching mathematically impossible. But we will certainly try. Agnes just noted that the phones were down and came back and rebooted the uninterruptible power supply. Thank you, dear.
You're welcome, Bob.
Look, a kiss.
I try to help.
Yeah, she sounds almost as good as I do right now. She sounds almost like me. I don't know. We'll either get over this upper respiratory thing or we will cut our heads off. We haven't decided yet.
I've been around a lot of toddlers lately, and
we had the grandchildren today.
Yes, and we didn't pass it on to them.
No, we didn't. We wore body condoms.
That just sounds really nasty.
Yes, it does. But
you don't need to even go there.
But no, we didn't want the little ones to get icky.
No, this isn't communicable at this point. It's just miserable, but gee whiz.
Well, it won't go away.
It's a family show. Don't talk about body condoms. That's nasty.
That's not anti-family.
Yes, it is.
It's pro-family.
What?
Yeah, it's pro-family. Because we didn't want our little grandchildren family getting sick from our noxious diseases.
That's prophylactic. That's not pro-family, you ding-dong. Jesus, man.
Go away, Agnes.
Yeah,
I love you.
See?
Yeah, see, you broke it. You
now,
broke the studio.
You will get sick.
Anyway, by the way, Jan in Vegas writing, hey, Bob, I took notes this time. Got your schedule down. Thanks. It's not that I think I'm so confounded important that you've got to have my schedule, but I have regard for you guys. And I don't want you thinking, that maybe some coal thug has come in the night and carried us away. No. This is about the fight for our homes and against the thugs of coal. because in both instances, the early June trip to D.C. and the trip to Netroots Nation, the trip to Netroots Nation is not and never has been about, Bob going to have a good time. I think, it was our buddy Tony who brought me the best breakfast burrito I have ever eaten in my life out in Vegas last summer. Well, you know, Tony watched us. And I think could tell you, and so did Patty. Couple of folks came by and watched, and all we do when we go to these things is work, and we come home more exhausted than we were when we left. But hopefully it has a purpose and it has a point. And in particular, it will be especially gratifying at this Netroots Nation up in Minneapolis. Because there will be a screening of Bobby Kennedy's new film, The Last Mountain, on the Friday of Netroots Nation in the afternoon, and a panel following. Bo Webb and I will be on the panel, among others. And The Last Mountain, in case you didn't know, centers largely upon the Coal River Wind Project. If you are a regular listener to the program, you will hear at the end of every program my exhortation that you go and learn about the Coal River Wind Project at coalriverwind.org. It is an effort to save a mountain, the last intact mountain, from devastation and destruction at the hands of the coal industry so that we can build clean, sustainable, renewable energy in the heart of coal country and show even the coal keeps the lights on, people. But the wind can do it too. And that when the wind keeps the lights on, 29 men don't have to die in filthy, dank holes in the ground where negligent corporate profiteers put those profits ahead of the lives of granddads and dads and sons and cousins and uncles and brothers. You get an idea for why there's such a sense of urgency around the Coal River Wind Project. The Last Mountain is premiering the 3rd in major cities. Watch your film listings in your own areas, especially if you live in bigger cities, D.C., New York, Seattle, San Francisco, L.A., Chicago. And if you get the opportunity to go and see the film in a theater, go and see the film in a theater, because there is footage in it that is much more well appreciated in a wide screen, big screen format. Because when you see the mountain blow up, it looks like what it looks like when the mountain blows up. It's not a little bitty mountain on a little bitty computer monitor screen. It's a big, living, breathing mountain being taken apart in the name of unholy profit. So that's going to be screened at Netroots Nation. And by the way, if any of the Horn family wants to come to Netroots Nation, you're absolutely invited. Love to hang out with you. You are more than welcome to join us. We'll find some way to have fun. I mean, they do have fun in Minnesota, right? I mean, I'm sorry. I'm a little redneck southern boy. I've never been, the furthest north I reckon I've ever been is Chicago, Illinois. I just made a lot of people scream by saying Illinois. I grew up with two weird state name pronunciations where I grew up. It was routinely, everybody where I grew up said Illinois. And they also said, especially the more proprietary southern ladies, they said Massachusetts. Massachusetts. I don't even know how to spell that. I think it goes back to a certain degree of resentment over that recent unpleasantness. Illinois and Massachusetts. Anybody who grew up in the South has probably heard those two things as well. So there you go. Now, why did I start out with coal? Well, I started out with coal because I've got kind of a bee under my bonnet about it. Yeah, I know, that bee lives under my bonnet, but sometimes it buzzes more loudly than others. I have the Coal River Wind Project on my mind because I want to see the Coal River Wind Project built, because it would be a great golden gleaming stake driven through the heart of the coal industry. And the light shining reflected off of that stake would shine all over West Virginia and show that, yes, we can be free of the murderous rampage of the coal industry. And I go back to a story I mentioned in passing in conversation, this story by Matt Sledge. Headline, Ted Turner says, coal oil industries need a good ass-kicking. And I realize that our buddy Kate doesn't much care for Ted Turner, but in this instance, I do. He was speaking, Turner was, I guess somewhere around Anaheim, California, to the annual convention of the wind industry. And it says, the article says, turbine manufacturers and clean energy utilities can't sit idly by while the coal industry touts its clean coal plan and oil companies flood the airwaves. He noted that he had nightmares caused by clean coal advertisements. Well, Ted, buddy, and I'll call you buddy because I used to work for you and you used to sign my paychecks and stuff. Ted, buddy, if you think you have nightmares, you come to the Coal River Valley and you live for a little while, or come anywhere that, that mountaintop removal is going on. You could go to Nicholas County, West Virginia. You could come to Fayette County, West Virginia. You could go to Boone, to Raleigh, to Logan, to Mingo, to McDowell, to Mercer, and you can have those nightmares made flesh. Because in West Virginia, in eastern Kentucky, in southwestern Virginia, in East Tennessee, the people who live there don't pay with their peaceful slumber, Ted. Buddy, they pay with their lives. They pay with their lives, Mr. Turner. Their children pay with their health. Their children pay with their teeth that dissolve in their heads from the water that the coal industry poisons, Mr. Turner. They pay, yes, with their peaceful sleep as well, Mr. Turner, because when it rains in the Coal River Valley and other areas where mountaintop removal is practiced, Mr. Turner, children go to sleep fully clothed, even with their shoes on, because they're afraid that if the sludge dam breaks from the heavy rains and they are swept miles downstream, they just don't want to be found naked when their little bodies are recovered. Mr. Turner. I applaud Ted Turner's call for real vigor in the renewable, sustainable energy sector. God knows we need it worse than anything that this, than just about anything in this country, because while campaign finance and money and getting the filthy money is the key to the cleanup of our political process, getting away from coal and getting away from hydrocarbons generally is the key to our future, regardless of how the politics work. Wind and solar really are our only hope. You are our only hope. Really. So in speaking on Monday, Ted Turner told the American Wind Energy Association's assembled members, let's go out and kick their asses. That's what they need, a good ass-kicking. This was in conversation with the group's CEO, Denise Bode. And then this quote that I brought out last night that I want to reconsider. I'm a good friend and admirer of Jay Rockefeller, the senator from West Virginia, Turner said. I lobbied him a year or so ago, and he said, Ted, I can't go against coal. He said, I can't. It's the biggest employer in my state. He said, I do a lot of good work in other areas. You're just going to have to give me a buy on this one. How pathetic is that? No, really, take just a moment and let the ping pong ball bounce around in your head. Tick, 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 tick. How pitiful is that? A Rockefeller, a Rockefeller, with enough money to burn an entire herd of sopping wet elephants in $100 bills. But he can't go against coal because he's too weak and he's too afraid. So we just have to give him buy on this one. We have to give Jay Rockefeller a buy on my children's health. We have to give Jay Rockefeller a buy on cancer. We have to give Jay Rockefeller a buy on heart disease, on pulmonary disease, on asthma, on emphysema, on chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. We have to give Jay Rockefeller a buy because he can't go against coal. Most everybody in West Virginia who's involved in the human rights struggle against mountaintop removal knows this story, but you may not. When he was just a young Rockefeller, just a young politician, having come down to West Virginia from wherever, New York or what have you, he says he fell in love with the place. And he saw what strip mining, it was just called strip mining then, was doing to West Virginia. And when he ran for governor, he said strip mining was a crime that had to be outlawed. He was beaten like a borrowed mule in that governor's race. And thereafter, he has never said another hard word about anything that the coal companies want to do to anyone in this state. Poison them, blast them, burn them, kill them, maim them, mutilate them. It's all fine by Jay Rockefeller because he can't go against coal. So we have to give him a buy on this one. You see how it works? And that's one of the important things that comes out of Bobby Kennedy's movie, is the fact that he's been appearing on every media outlet, the medium that he can find. Imagine my surprise when I saw him on Morning Joe today. The conversation and questioning was led by Mika Brzezinski, probably because Joe Scarborough lacked both the brains and the will to say anything bad about the coal industry. But Bobby did a good job of making clear the fact that West Virginia is a rogue outlaw place where the politicians are entirely a wholly owned subsidiary of the coal industry, all the way up to a Rockefeller, for God's sakes. You got to give me a buy on this one, Ted! How dare he give me a buy? It's not him who's getting the buy. It's the coal industry who's getting the buy. And we know the price being paid for it and who's doing the paying. Every child in this country who develops asthma is paying for Jay Rockefeller's buy because the burning of coal is the single greatest cause of childhood asthma in the United States. I was having an email conversation with Darlene earlier about this. The American Lung Association, who I don't think can ever be referred to as an environmental tree-hugging group, conservatively estimates, that means that probably more than the number that they're estimating is likely the reality, conservatively estimates that every year in the United States, 26,000 people die needlessly from diseases caused solely because we burn coal for electricity. 26,000 people a year. That's roughly half the death total. You know, yesterday was Memorial Day. That's roughly half the death total from Vietnam every year. Half of Vietnam a year. It took how many years to come up with the 50-plus thousand dead from Vietnam? And we do half of it every year. And the half is comprised of 5-year-olds and 16-year-olds and working moms and struggling dads and grannies and grandpas who have never smoked, never drank, never done nothing. And they die so that the shareholders in big coal companies can have another dividend. They die. Whether you realize it or not, you've got skin in the game. I don't have more of it because I live here in the heart of it. I just have it and need for you and those you talk to understand they've got it too. Maybe I'll get an email in a minute from the Great Northwest saying, "Well, Bob, we're pretty well done with coal up here in Washington and Oregon." No, you're not. No, you're not. Because they're digging it as fast as they're putting it on trains as fast as they can dig it out of the ground in Wyoming and Montana. They're putting it on trains in great big hopper-filled cars. And they want to send it to the Columbia River Basin. And they want to put it on boats and send it to China. Just like they're dismantling a mountain here a few miles away from me, whose blasting rattles our windows. And they're putting all of that coal from that dismantled mountain on trains that go to Norfolk, Virginia. And from Norfolk, Virginia, it goes to Mumbai, India. Now, in India's sunny clime, where I used to spend my time a servant of Her Majesty the Queen, of all them black-faced crew, the finest man I knew was my regimental bisti, Gunga Dean. Yeah, so they can be poisoned a little bit more, too. Because poison's good business. Poison's good money. Right? And so, in the Great Northwest, in the Columbia River Basin, they want to build a giant terminal. And what an appropriate name for a building that loads coal, a terminal. Because everything associated with coal is terminal. Because everything associated with coal is death. Because coal itself is death. It's dead stuff. Buried far under the ground so that it could never again poison the earth. It's dead stuff. And wherever it goes, it brings death with it. And they want to build a coal terminal. They withdrew the permit for that coal terminal so that they could fudge it up and play with it a little bit and ding it a little bit and finesse it a little bit and resubmit it and build it and say, "Look, it's going to be a clean coal terminal now." Everything precious about the Columbia River will die because coal is death. Right? Yeah. But we got to give Jay Rockefeller a bye because he can't go against coal. Thank God for people who are willing to stand up, who are brave enough to stand up against the thugs and the barons of the coal industry. She's gone now, but her memory will not soon be forgotten, and her energy lives in every one of us that she taught to stand up and fight. Struggle. Judy Bonds. And her spirit lives on in Beau Webb and Maria Gano, in Vernon Haltom, Chuck Nelson, and all the various people who, though not blessed with the billions and resources of the coal industry, stand up nonetheless because it's the only thing they can do and still be able to look in the mirror in the morning. And so it is also in, no, really, Mongolia. Story in the New York Times yesterday by Andrew Jacobs. Anger over protesters' deaths leads to intensified demonstrations by Mongolians. Do you see how the cancer spreads? It was just a few weeks ago that I had an individual on talking about the proposed mass relocation of people who had lived on land in Southeast Asia. For 20,000 years. But 20,000 years on the same piece of ground does not convey title good enough to keep the coal thugs out. We're talking about thousands of people, by the way. The same goes for Inner Mongolia. The New York Times article reads as follows. Ethnic Mongolians seething over the killings of two Mongolians by Han Chinese drivers took their anger to the streets of this capital of Inner Mongolia on Monday, Hohhot, China, in a rare expression of anti-government sentiment here. Because even if you live in a fascist dictatorship like China, there is still a breaking point. There is still a point where burning within the human soul remains the conscience. And the conscience, when it functions inside the human psyche, has a place where beyond which it will not let a normally functioning individual go. And so, as the news report says, the protests, which drew more than 100 people to the center of Hohhot and led to a series of detentions, followed a week of similar demonstrations across this vast borderland that have rattled the authorities. By the way, guess who it is that wants that coal that's underneath the ground in Mongolia? We take you now to St. Louis, Missouri. Yeah. Peabody Energy. One of, if not the largest coal companies in the United States. Not content. Not content to destroy America. The constant search for unholy profit has led them to far distant lands like Inner Mongolia. The rally took place on the day that Chinese officials announced they would file murder charges against a forklift driver accused of striking and killing Yan Wenlong, who was among 20 people protesting a coal mine near Zilin Hat on May 15th. The deaths of Mr. Yan and of another activist killed by a truck driver 5 days earlier have galvanized anger over the destruction of the Mongolian grasslands and stoked long simmering resentment over Beijing's governance of this resource-rich region. God help you! Anywhere on this planet, God help you, because no one else will if you happen to live on resource-rich land. Because it doesn't matter how long you've been there, what kind of title you have to the place, what sort of connection you have to the earth itself, by God, you are, and your home is, in their way. And in the way of their prophets. On Sunday, the state-run news media reported that Inner Mongolia's Communist Party Secretary, Hu Chunhua, had met with students and teachers and promised justice in the killing of the other activist named Mergen. A herder! A herder! No, really, a herder! Whose body was reported to have been dragged nearly 500 feet by the truck driver. Two Han Chinese have been arrested in connection with the death. So they'll probably take the forklift driver and the truck driver and the truck driver's buddy riding shotgun out somewhere and shoot them and harvest their organs and sell them to Steve Jobs. But that will not get in the way of the vast, vulgar, toxic, poisonous strip mine operation that they have going in Inner Mongolia for the sake of the shareholders of Peabody Goddamned Energy. Until now, the authorities have met the protests with a heavy-handed police response and highly publicized efforts to appease ethnic Mongolians who make appease. I wonder what coal keeps the lights on sounds like in Mongolian or Mandarin or... Right. Until now, the authorities have met the protests with a heavy-handed police response and highly publicized efforts, not like good PR, to appease ethnic Mongolians who make up less than 20% of the region's population of 24 million and have long complained that migration of Han Chinese is diluting their language and culture. You see, they're being ethnically cleansed, too. Genocide doesn't have to happen all at once. It doesn't have to be 6 million people in the space of 6 years. It can be thousands upon thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands over the course of a century as well. We're seeing deliberate depopulation here in Appalachia because we're in their way. The acknowledgement of the anger, coupled with the large deployment of soldiers and police officers, suggested that the authorities were intent on avoiding the ethnic mayhem that struck other areas of China where indigenous groups, notably Tibetans in Tibet and Uyghurs in Xinjiang, have bridled under the influx of Han Chinese, the country's dominant ethnic group. Until now, protests among Mongolians have been unusual. Gee, I wonder why they're suddenly standing up. Because the light finally came on for them. The day finally dawned when they realized that the ultimate goal is to get rid of them wholesale by getting rid of their connection to the land. You see, Mongolia is a place of vast steppe land, high plateaus, grasslands, savanna of a sort. And with no mountains, they can't do mountaintop removal, so they do it in reverse. Just like they do it in reverse in Montana, just like they do it in reverse in Wyoming. They dig big holes and pile up mountains next to them. No. Why have the Mongolians stood up? In addition to promising to punish those responsible for the deaths of anti-mining activists, see, there is a little bit of difference. 100 years ago, the mining companies just took labor activists out and put the bullet behind their ear. It happened fairly routinely here in my county and others in West Virginia and in Kentucky and in Virginia. Because the Wagner Act, the National Labor Relations Act, was passed in 1933 on FDR's watch, because of that, the coal companies could no longer do that with impunity. They still did it, but they sometimes were punished for it. But it's different. It's different in the highlands of Southeast Asia. It's different in Mongolia. Just like in Colombia, the coal companies still take the labor organizer out and put a bullet behind his ear and then burn down the house of his family with the family in it. In addition to promising to punish those responsible for the deaths of anti-mining activists, officials in recent days have announced plans for free tuition and textbooks for Mongolian high school and vocational students and $680 million in spending to improve drinking water, transportation, and agriculture. You wouldn't have to improve the drinking water if you weren't poisoning it in the first place. Engabatu Togochog, president of the Southern Mongolian Human Rights Information Center, an exile group in New York, said government largesse would not necessarily address the underlying grievances of the region's Mongolians and might exacerbate them if development projects sought to move shepherds off the grasslands. Development projects. Hang some quotes around that. That means coal mining and oil and gas drilling. Mr. Togochog said, "The root cause of the problem is not money. The problem is the conflict between the Mongolian people's efforts to maintain their distinct culture and way of life and the Chinese authorities' attempts to exploit the natural resources of the region." Oh! Let's give a solar toaster to Mr. Togochog. Sounds like somewhere in China, there's a little guy wandering around with one of those sleazy Don Blankenship mustaches talking about coal keeps the lights on. Occupying 12% of China's land, the Inner Mongolian Autonomous Region has become an increasingly vital source of the coal, natural gas, and rare earth elements that help fuel the Chinese economy. Look, its coal keeps the lights on all over again. Critics complain that in addition to environmental degradation and forced relocations, mining provides few tangible benefits to ethnic Mongolians. Duh! It's the same story no matter where you are. The people who live around the extraction of the hydrocarbon get no benefit whatsoever from it. 4,000 or so mountaintop removers here in West Virginia make $60,000 to $50,000 a year doing it. But the entire state has to bow and scrape and kowtow to them while they poison us. Some bargain. Last month, herders in the Zilongol area stepped up their campaign against coal mining vehicles that zigzag across the steppe, chewing up the fragile pasture land and occasionally running down livestock. Now, we are talking here about people who have been on that land, yea verily, from virtually time immemorial. This is the land out of which, can't remember his proper name, but the man who came to be known as Genghis Khan rode with his multitudes, and change the face of earth. More human beings on this planet carry the DNA of Genghis Khan than any other single human being. Amazing to contemplate. You gotta figure Genghis Khan was a stud duck in more than just the saddle. That is the heritage. That's the patrimony. That is the history. Those steps where one of the single most effective human structures was developed, the yurt, is now threatened by the coal industry. Those grasslands, those plains, those steppes that have given life and sustained human life for millennia will no longer be able to do so because some swell in a high-rise in St. Louis or Beijing has decided he, by God, needs a solid gold cloth of gold shower curtain and a new Maybach next year. And to hell and gone with some herder named Mergen. Last month, herders in the Zilingol area stepped up their campaign against coal mining vehicles that zigzag across the steppe, chewing up the fragile pasture land and occasionally running down livestock. Mergen, the organizer of a local group of shepherds who was killed 3 weeks ago, was among a group of 40 men who sought to block a caravan of coal-laden trucks with their bodies, according to the Southern Mongolian Human Rights Information Center. Like many Mongolians, Mergen used a single name. That's why the New York Times style manual does not insist that he be referred to as Mr. Mergen. Word of his death has set off recurring protests in a number of cities, including one on May 25th in Zilinhot, a county-level city midway between Hohhot and Beijing that was reported to have drawn nearly 2,000 people. Last Friday, Amnesty International's Asia-Pacific Deputy Director Catherine Baber said martial law had been declared in some areas. The protests in Hohhot took place under enormous security with hundreds of soldiers and police officers patrolling parks and keeping thousands of students locked up on college campuses. A student by the name of Zhao Ming, age 20, said, "We feel like animals that have been caged up. This is about defending our culture and defending our dignity." Internet and cell phone service has been cut off in parts of Hohhot. And yet still, they gather in Xinhua Square in Hohhot. Square. Head cold, sorry. And unarmed, they still stand in displays of bravery that no human being who carries a gun has ever understood or ever will. They stood against an entire phalanx of police officers. And then they marched. They carried a poster that said, "Protect the grasslands." Some Chinese in army fatigues had bullhorns screaming, "Maintain social stability! Maintain social stability!" And then, after about an hour of the rally, the riot police moved in and started dragging off the demonstrators. And disappeared them. Thank you, Ron. Genghis Khan was Timojin. And thus it is that everywhere coal goes, coal brings death. There's a mining boom in Australia. and it brings death. From today's New York Times, Australia's mining boom is Pied Piper for workers. People running, not walking, to work in the death industry. Because they just don't have enough people to dig the death out of the ground as quickly as the profiteers want the death dug out of the ground. This is worse than grave robbing. In our conversation last night, Sandra mentioned the latest from Chris Hedges. You can go to Truthdig for that. The title, The Sky Really Is Falling. And he points, it's a lengthy article, I'm not going to do the whole thing. It's a lengthy article, I recommend it to you. The fact that, yeah, it's getting uglier than anybody even imagined. And it's getting ugly in Australia, and it's getting ugly in the Little Egypt corner of Illinois. It's getting ugly in Montana and Wyoming. It already is ugly. Even before the first spade of earth is turned, if it is being turned in the search for coal, it's already ugly. This is the reality of our world. This is a reality that touches you whether you realize it or not. And it doesn't matter to the people in the bespoke suits whether you die or whether your loved ones writhe in sickness so that they can be richer because they haven't figured out that they still haven't figured out a way to hitch U-Hauls to hearses. That there is nothing yet that can prevent the ultimate mortality that has been found in wealth. There's no amount of wealth that can keep you from ultimately going to your long home. But the CEOs of Alpha Natural Resources and Massey and Peabody and Arch haven't figured that out yet. And how pitiable they would be were they not so maniacally homicidal. Pay attention. Pay attention. No matter where you are, they're coming for you because they want it all. It doesn't matter if it's oil. It doesn't matter if it's natural gas. It doesn't matter if it's coal. They want it all. And if all happens to have a little bit of your blood, your bone, your sinew mixed into it, that doesn't matter. They want it all. And they will gladly roast your bones and suck your marrow out. Because they are worshippers in a cult that is consecrated to death. Because they are coal. And because when they sit down to lunch, by God, they never taste coal dust on caviar. But you wipe it off windowsills, and you carry it in your lungs. And women of childbearing age betray their very wombs with the mercury that can be found in their hair that will make sure that their children aren't quite as smart as they should have been because of the coal-borne mercury that is in the bloodstream and in the vitals of every human being in this nation, in the streams, in the rivers, in the fish, in the people, in the very DNA of who and what we are. Lots more to talk about. So by all means, get in line. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported, emphasis on listener-supported, liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
Today you blasted near my street, and my house cracked at my feet. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Politicians by your side, they look so satisfied. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Promises you made amount to stealing. As a giant rock lands on my Chevrolet, suddenly I got that lawsuit feeling. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Hard to know that the sheriff's lips will kiss you. Now, where they kiss you, I can't say. We're asking for a big injunction issue. We can't help it if our homes are in your way. No, we can't help it if our homes are in your way.
Change comes slow until II. Vines were drowned, the clock was the American thing to do. Families gathered round their radios to hear FDR say we'd make it somehow in our time. Jobless faces in their grim plight, while poor men in a drag line blow the mountaintop off to take its heart out. Now it knows what we've lost in this company town. It's what we know. Change comes hard, change comes slow. Until the bottom falls out, that's how it goes down. Until the money's all drained from a company town. Until the life's all drained out of a company town.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, May 31st, 2011.
Your country will be there with you every single step of the way.
Facing the aftermath of disaster in Joplin. Typhoon hits Japan. Germany dumps nukes. Rise of the emissions, now the highest on record. Plus...
We don't want the West to go and find alternatives. Because clearly the higher price oil goes, the more you have incentive to go and find alternatives.
Saudi Arabia really wants you to have lower gas prices.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
I love that smell of the emissions.
Well, something certainly smells here, Sarah Palin. Keep up the good work, but quit sucking on that tailpipe. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, how about that Sarah Palin over Memorial Day weekend celebrating the emissions at the Rolling Thunder rally this weekend as she seems to be getting back into the presidential game? That ought to be fun, eh?
Well, fun is relative. Global emissions of greenhouse gases are actually rising. However, they are now at the highest in history, so says a new report from the UN International Energy Agency, warning world leaders that time is running out to reduce global greenhouse gas emissions to stave off the worst effects of climate change. The new report shows that in 2010, global emissions of carbon dioxide began climbing again after the global worldwide recession, reaching the highest levels ever recorded recorded in the modern era. Carbon dioxide is just one of the greenhouse gases emitted by human activity that climate scientists say is causing a dangerous rise in global temperatures and more extreme and intense weather events.
We saw a new statistic over the weekend. What was it? A 40% rise in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere over just the last century alone?
Yes, and the new numbers give new urgency to the first gathering of world mayors on climate change. The C40 group, headed by New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, is meeting for the first time this week in Brazil to discuss adaptation strategies for cities to prepare for the predicted increase in deadly heat waves, droughts, and floods predicted with climate change. Speaking of extreme weather events, President Obama was in Joplin, Missouri on Sunday to offer comfort and promises of federal assistance to the victims of the record tornado.
We will be with you every step of the way until Joplin is restored and this community is back on its feet. We're not going anywhere.
The record Joplin tornado, the deadliest single tornado since 1950, has killed 139 people so far, with 29 still listed as missing. And because more than a third of the town was destroyed, officials with the Federal Emergency Management Administration and Joplin City officials say that the looming struggle is now to find permanent housing nearby for the thousands of victims currently housed in temporary shelters. But the promise of federal aid comes with strings, however. Republican House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, on CBS's Face the Nation on Sunday, explained why the nation can't afford to give disaster assistance to the victims of the Joplin tornado unless they cut the funds elsewhere.
It's like this: if when a family is struck with tragedy, like the family of Joplin, they have... Let's say if they had, $10,000 set aside to do something else with, to buy a new car or to do something else, and then they were struck with a member of the family or something and needed to take that money to apply it to that, that's what they would do. Because families don't have unlimited money, and really, neither does the federal government.
That's right, Eric Cantor. The federal government is almost exactly like a family. They have no additional resources that
no
they can
insurance.
Call on. No, nothing at all. And by the way, let's keep giving those billions in dollars of free money to the oil companies, because they're not like a family either. I guess they
clearly
deserve
they need it.
Free money, yeah.
The GOP instead proposes cutting funding for clean energy research, which is great for the Saudis. In a surprisingly candid interview on CNN, Saudi Prince Al-Walid bin Talal stated the Saudis want oil prices to drop just enough to slow down efforts to develop alternative energy.
We want the price to be between 70 and 80, not only to help the West, but also to help ourselves. We don't want the West to go and find alternatives, because clearly the higher price oil goes, the more you have incentive to go and find alternatives.
At least he's honest. Moving over to Japan, as if nature hasn't done enough, Typhoon Songda made landfall on the main island of Japan over the weekend, fortunately too far south to be a direct hit on the stricken Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, but still strong enough to force plant workers to temporarily suspend operations to keep the reactors cool. TEPCO, the company that owns the plant, apologized in advance of the storm for being unprepared. Japan's ongoing nuclear nightmare has also had a profound effect on Germany. After massive anti-nuclear protests in that country over the weekend, Germany made it official on Monday they will completely abandon all nuclear power within the next 11 years and focus instead on an ambitious strategy to build the nation's renewable energy sector.
Good for Germany, showing that good old can-do American spirit. For more on that and the stories we did not get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com, where you can also leave a donation to help sponsor the Green News so we can keep reporting independent green news over your public airwaves. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't forget about that body stuff.
www.doublegenius.com.
Yeah. It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Ten past the hour, we begin hour number two. Now, it occurs to me, as I contemplate stories like that out of Mongolia, that whether we realize it or not, and I think it would do us well to realize it, that the single great human rights movement, despite what people last year in Las Vegas at Netroots Nation like Majora Carter said, the great civil rights, human rights, global movement will be the struggle against the monsters of the coal industry, the fiends of the oil industry, and the jackals of the natural gas industry. It will be. Because that is the point at which choices have to be made whether to survive or to give in to profit-motivated destroyers of life itself. They have found the courage to stand up in Mongolia. They're standing up in Southeast Asia. They're standing up in India. They're standing up in Appalachia, in Alaska, in Montana, in Wyoming, in Arizona, in Illinois, in cities besooted by coal filth. And not because they're worried about, you know, bugs and birds and beetles, but because they understand that this is the very struggle of life itself. And the good news is there is nowhere you are that you cannot join that struggle yourself. Goya, baby! Goya! Get off your ass! Right? Right. With regard to yesterday's program, and that sleazy bit of filth I played for you from America's Truth Detector, Flush Flimball. These things are particularly effective when you chew them up for the refreshing burst of flavor. Bring me more pills. Got an email here from Paul in Portland, who says, I was listening to your podcast yesterday from White Rose Society. Thank you, Ben. And I will add thank you to everybody who supports the horn, so that we don't have to charge for that stuff. Paul says, when you quoted Limbaugh talking about parents not being on the brink of poverty, being able to afford to have their useless kids move in with them, I nearly lost it. By the way, the subject line of this email is, Limbaugh ruined my day. Here's a reality check for Mr. Limbaugh, says Paul. I moved out on my own when I was 21 and experienced life on my own, working hard and making a career. Even though the economy officially hit in November of 08, I was basically laid off by March of 08. I used my savings and other means to finish my BS in biochemistry and found myself with no job and no experience in March of 09. My parents were kind enough to take me back into their home at the age of 31 with them in their early 60s. It has been over 2 years now, and I'm still there. No work to speak of except the occasional odd seasonal job during the summer or holiday season. My dad lost his job last August and has been unable to find work for nearly a year now and may not get one since he's only a couple of years from Social Security. Currently, my mother is the only working person in our household. But don't worry, Mr. Limbaugh. Our family believes in personal responsibility and not depending solely on the government to take care of us. They saved for years, my parents did, in IRAs and 401ks and investments, and not just Social Security. Oh, wait. They lost more than half of all their savings in the stock market crash of 08. My parents still have house payments and other bills, and have been dipping into savings to get by, even with cutting back and being fiscally responsible. My parents have been helping me out financially, but mostly I have a place to sleep with a roof over my head and food on the table. I currently go to Portland State University getting my master's in biochemistry and constantly walk past homeless in the street, thinking that could easily be me or my whole family, and may yet be if things don't get better in the next couple of years. I give some spare change to those on the street when I can. Mr. Limbaugh's words were a reminder to me of how ignorant people can be with reality on the ground. He doesn't understand that families are banding together just to survive. He doesn't know what it is like to sacrifice your own financial well-being to stop your son from living on the streets. I don't know if he has any children at all. He doesn't know the pain and heartache of a son who's watching his parents cashing in on what they can give to their son, to give their son a shot at a better life. Things have gotten better since I got my student loans going again, thank you, Mr. Obama. But this is the reality of my family's situation, and we're taking responsibility for it. Where's anyone else's personal responsibility? No one from Wall Street's taken responsibility for this mess, and they whine when something like the Consumer Protection Agency is made to take responsibility for it. To my knowledge, only Alan Greenspan analogized, saying, I underestimated the greed of Wall Street, which to me is like saying I didn't think the little child over there would figure out how to get the lid off the cookie jar. Whenever I hear the right talk about things going wrong, it's always personal responsibility and not my fault, but hardly ever I'm sorry. Well, you know, being a corporation means never having to say you're sorry. Well, I'm sorry for being a burden to my parents for the moment. And I will be damned before I ever leave them to rot in a nursing home. I'm curious, Mr. Limbaugh, the status of your father, and if you have or will put him in a nursing home, probably the best that money can buy, instead of taking care of him like he took care of you to get your radio business started. Thanks for listening, signed, Paul in Portland. And I want to back up to one line in that email. Paul writes, Limbaugh doesn't understand that families are banding together just to survive. I differ with you, Paul. I think he understands it very well, and so does Eric Cantor, and so does John Boehner, and so does Mitch McConnell, and so does every right-wing religion industry directed and influenced thug in this country. They understand it very well. And it scares them water-boweled. Because when families do come back together, each member of the family becomes a little stronger, a little less desperate. And the ultimate goal of any Republican is always the desperation of the individual. That's why they talk about, oh, we're a nation of rugged individuals pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps and getting our boats raised by the tide. That's why they do that. They strive to create a myth that we're all alone. Every last one of us, all alone. And that there will be no help. And there will be no mercy. And our only hope is to bow down before their blood-sodden altar to unholy profit. The color of the right-wing flag should be like the color of the flag of the Spanish crown during the time of the conquest. Blood and gold. Sangre y oro. Because that is all with which they are concerned. It is all that motivates them. Blood and gold. Clayton writing in, he says, in my not-so-humble opinion, our struggle is with predatory capitalism, of which coal is but a small part. I agree, Clayton, but the thing is, coal, oil, and gas, well, I mean, look, I guess there's, if you want to get really, really nihilistic about it, there's another way to look at it. And that is, if coal, oil, and gas get their way, capitalism will go bye-bye. Because I don't know of any chimpanzees practicing capitalism, or dolphins, or hyenas, or eagles, or bears, or salmon, if there are any of those left by the end either. Not aware of any capitalistic cockroaches except the sort that wears bespoke suits and walks on two legs and talks with their teeth clenched and has lobster for lunch and doesn't taste coal dust on their caviar. But the most predatory of predatory capitalism is the hydrocarbon industry. Ron in Raleigh says, in one of John Wayne's movies, I think it was The Shootist, there's a line, saying I'm sorry is a sign of weakness. I think the right honestly believes that BS. Well, they do. They do. Any manifestation of human conscience is a manifestation and a confession of personal shortcoming by members of the right wing. Kevin writing in. In defense of and after living in China for almost 3 months and learning so much about Chinese culture and folkways, trust me when I tell you this, it probably was not after much consideration and thought that the Chinese have the current policies regarding coal production. The Chinese mindset is that the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, and right now the many need a steady and reliable source of energy in order to keep the factories running and get the vast army of peasants out of the squalor of the countryside. Yes, it's tragic what is happening to the many minorities that happen to be living on top of coal. However, this tragedy pays for itself 10 or even 20-fold. Regardless of what happens in China, you always have to consider this country as a population of 1.4 billion people. Anything that happens is going to happen in a big way. Maintaining social stability is paramount in Chinese thought. And Kevin's right, because that's Confucianism writ large. And Confucianism still plays a large part. Even though labor unions may not be tolerated in China, the evil acts of the Don Blankenship would not be tolerated either. And I guess Kevin and I are going to have to disagree a little bit, because the evil acts of Foxconn are certainly tolerated, in which a person has to work on their feet for 12 hours a day and live in a grim dormitory and is not allowed to speak while on the production line, so that all of us Americans and Western Europeans and well-to-do anywhere else's can have our iPads. So Steve Jobs can afford to go out and buy some kid's liver. But anyway, in China, Blankenship would have been stripped of his wealth and be doing forced labor for life out in one of those coal mines in China. That's if he's lucky. Yes, it is tragic what is happening with many ethnic minorities in China, and I don't support it in any way. However, the flip side to all this is China's green policy, which is paramount in China's recently released 5-year plan. I may be wrong here, but I just wanted to point out that the much lesser of two evils. Always in your corner, your friend currently living in Shanghai, Kevin. Thanks, Kevin. No, there's no getting around the fact that China recognizes what it faces. That's why they are building green, renewable, sustainable energy installations as quickly as they can get them up. That's why they have to have my mountains shipped to them for their steel mills. What they're doing, you see, while they are doing some of it to themselves, Peabody Coal really is involved in coal mining in Mongolia, and that is American profiteering with the blessing from the Chinese government. But what China is doing is externalizing environmental degradation. They have massive problems. The LOESS, Lois Plains, have been subjected to such massive erosion issues that it plumes out into the sea and is visible from space. This is a recipe for famine, by the way. The rivers are a mess. The Three Gorges Dam Project, which is a human rights and environmental nightmare, was created to alleviate electricity shortfalls. But China is aware of the problem associated with hydrocarbons. And so, in the short term, recognizing what they must have, they are externalizing the degradation to places like Appalachia, where people like Don Blankenship were more than happy to do the degrading because they were being made extremely wealthy as pimps. That's all Don Blankenship is. Don Blankenship is a pimp. And a nasty one at that. But this all comes at a terrible cost, because even with the foresight of recognizing they've got to get green and they've got to get sustainable, we're at a place where we can no longer afford to say, well, we'll get sustainable day after tomorrow or year after next or by 2050. All that talk about tipping points, it's going to turn out we passed the tipping point a while back. And now all we can do is engage in crisis management, and the more coal we burn, the more crisis management we have to engage in. Just saying. So light up the phone lines if you want to. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. If you want to place the first call you've ever made, this would be a great time to do it, because we've never lost a caller yet, except through technological stupidity and weather acts. But no, nobody's ever fainted dead away from, Bob, whoop! And no, that doesn't happen. So jump right in. The conversation's fine. Hey, welcome to the program. There. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
Okay, first of all, got a couple of things. But first of all, although I'm still on my rear end, I am trying. I'm not doing much good, but I am still trying. And I will continue to keep trying.
You know, showing up is half the battle.
Yes. I can't physically show up down at their offices or at protests because I am more or less housebound. But
But you're willing to do what you can do from where you are.
Yeah. Well,
you're not going to pass your days away watching Dancing with the Idiots.
Yeah, they don't like hearing my voice on the phone. Because I've got one button and it's, you know, it's, why aren't you complaining about this? I don't care if it's on the Washington side. It's going to pollute Oregon, too.
Right.
You know, the whole nine yards. And so I am doing what I can. And I will continue to do so. I'm not going to guarantee I'm going to succeed at anything. But I'm going to take a whack at it. I'm a Scot, and we're good at lost causes.
Yeah, and good at not quitting.
Yeah. Yeah, oh boy, that's a trick. I wanted to mention something that... Okay, I'm one of those people that watch the president's speeches, because if there's, you know, whether you have issues with him or not, the man gives good speech.
Oh, great speeches.
Oh, yeah.
Now, especially in comparison to the bumbling oaf we had for the previous 8 years, who couldn't say, hello, my name is George, without screwing it up.
Right. And so when I do that, what I do is I go to the spam. Which means I don't get just the president's words. I get the introduction, the whole nine yards. And you get little nuggets of information. And sooner or later, this is going to filter through to the right wing, and you are going to start seeing right wing heads pop all over the internet. Because when President Obama was in England, and he made his address to Parliament, the gentleman that introduced him dropped a little factoid. in the 1,000 year history, close to 1,000 year history of that body, there has been one president who has addressed that body at that hall.
One.
The black one.
Yeah.
That's going to make, I can just hear Russia's head going pop. And that makes me chortle. That just makes me chortle. I don't know how anybody else would do it, but it just
well, just anything that leads one to the idea that maybe Flush Flimball is out there, you know, with his ulcer or the cyst on his butt or whatever, the weeping or fistulating or whatever it does. Yeah, that's always inspiring. That's always a pleasant moment.
Yeah. Yeah, he mentioned in it, Obama in his speech mentioned that the previous three speakers were the Pope, Nelson Mandela, and the Queen. Which is a little, it's not exactly what. I really cannot see Sarah Palin getting invited. I can just see every right-winger just going bananas when they figure that out. I don't think it's gotten out, though, because, like I said, most people just, if they watch it at all, they just watch the part that's on the news, and they only show the actual remarks by the president. They don't show the introduction by, and that you only get if you watch the span.
Interesting.
Which is really fun. Now, here's my last piece of goodie. Representative Eric Cantor, his little, I don't know of any term bad enough for him, after his comments about disaster aid and basically holding it hostage.
Well, not holding it hostage, holding Joplin, Missouri hostage.
Yes.
And remember, and I'm going to say this, and maybe I'll get some grief for it, but let's remember that that town voted overwhelmingly, I believe, for Eric Cantor's party in the last presidential election.
Okay, now.
And yet it was that one who went there and said, your nation will not leave you in the lurch.
Yeah, okay. Now, here's something that, yeah, I made a phone call to the representative's office today. Here's what I told them. Here's what a lot of people should be calling them and telling them. The 7th district, I used to live in the 7th district when I was about 10. It's rather prone to getting hit with hurricanes. Now, if he wants to take this kind of action, he really doesn't want to do that because, bud, if you are in the path of a Cat 5 hurricane, you really don't want to be doing that.
Probably not, no.
And that area has been hit repeatedly with hurricanes.
Like as in time after time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the one I was in, they ended up retiring the name. It was a fun one. But these people, I don't know where his head's at.
Well, think about it, Susan. You know, you'll come to the answer. It's much more party first. Power, 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 power. Right?
But I don't care how rich you are, how powerful you are, if a hurricane comes in and squats on you, you get a real good lesson in how little you are. It's like those people in Joplin learned real fast how little tiny they were when that tornado came and wiped them out. If Mother Nature turns around and decides to bite you, she's going to bite you real good. And I cannot, I literally cannot believe this man has been in a hurricane. He would not do this if he had ever been through one. I've been through one. I survived it. We weren't even badly damaged. But something even anywhere close to what Joplin, geez Louise. And he wants to politicize this. He's obviously never been in something that life altering. Shallow, shallow, shallow.
I'd like to say that it's shallow, but I don't think it is, Susan. I think it is simply a matter of priorities. And people who are laid out, ruined, killed, tormented by something like a hurricane, they don't matter. And he'll be okay. He'll get away.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a term for somebody that has no pity for the people like that. They call them sociopaths.
That or good capitalists. I think the terms are interchangeable.
Certain of them, yeah. I run across some of what some people would call good capitalists who would turn around and then immediately, every dime they made, they would immediately try and give it away. But the majority of them, yeah, you're right. There's something missing. If he hadn't gotten into politics, I would fully expect him to become a serial killer.
Yeah, or something. Well, or a coal executive. Oh, wait, same thing.
Same thing. Exactly. Because let's face it, how many people has the blank ship killed?
We may never know the number.
A lot.
Yeah, a bunch.
And he'll never pay a dime in penalties. He'll never serve a day in jail.
Most likely not.
But hey, let's face it, those sociopaths on Wall Street are never going to spend a day in jail. Coburn is never going to spend a day in jail. It seems like we put all of our lawbreakers in one basket. It's called Congress and Wall Street.
And yet, well, not even yet, Susan. Yeah, maybe and yet. And yet, is there anything on the horizon to suggest anything's going to change? No, I mean, you know, really change, sea change, monumental change, shift, paradigm shift kind of change.
Yeah, there is.
What? Egypt?
It is the silliest thing you've ever heard, but in what it means, it shows that these people are really, really, really scared. 70 Miller is touring she got the little stool show together and she's touring. The guy who's doing the booking for the show had a right winger call up and offered him $10,000 not to book it. They wanted to book a date in Austin. And they kept getting the runaround for this one theater. And they finally got a woman called up the Stephanie Miller's office. And they found out, she called up in tears. And it was just pure politics. They didn't want her in this publicly funded theater, by the way, because it was a liberal act. So they went and got another theater. And that's okay. The thing is, these people, and they're having basically underground scalpers, people who come up and show up and grab, they put up sites and say, we're the official ticket sellers, and then they're selling tickets for, they put the price at $500 and some for tickets, which generates a lot of complaints. And this whole, if you just took one thing, it would be nothing. But if you add it all together, the right wing is scared to death of two guys and a woman who makes fart jokes. And if that, they're that scared of a silly little radio show.
But I don't think it's fear, Susan. I don't think it's fear. I think it's just plain suppression. Don't book Stephanie Miller. Don't book anybody that's not the pre-approved and on our side. Do you see? It's not fear. It is them controlling certain aspects of media conveyance and determined that we not be allowed into the show or on the ride, so to speak.
Possibly. But then you combine that.
I mean, it's the same reason that there are precious little there are precious few, for instance, 50,000 watt clear channel, and I don't mean the corporation. I mean, it's a technical term. That's what they are.
There are
few, if any, liberals or progressives broadcasting on 50,000 watt clear channel stations. You know, like WLW or WWL or there's a bunch of them. Those are the ones. Yeah. KMOX. I'm sure there's a bunch on the West Coast. And none of them have left-wing or, liberal or progressive talkers on them. Maybe some of them will have the poor, soppy Alan Combs on them. Tops.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that they, it's not fear. It's just a determination. Well, okay, maybe, I don't know. Let's work through this. Maybe it is fear, Susan. But they will not, they do not want a level playing field. All they want to do is have their message and none other.
Yeah.
It's not fear. What I'm saying, it's not fear so much as the fascism that we were talking about last night.
Yeah, well, that I would agree with, right? And until you take a look at the poll numbers of the governor in Florida, the Tea Party electorate, like the guy who took Grayson's seat in Congress, their poll numbers, they're tanking big time. The recall elections in...
Just wait. Let me just interrupt for a second. Because I want us to have a working understanding of what all of this dissatisfaction with the right wing means. You and I would like for it to mean that the sun has come up, the light has gone on, the dawn is beaming through, and the American people are saying, "Whoops, we screwed up." let's put the Democrats back in charge.
That's not what it means.
It means that the American electorate is so dumbed down and so well chumped that the only thing they understand, the sum and total of the American electorate's political savvy, is to say throw the bums out.
Yeah.
So here, by all means, let me say this: if by some miracle the Democrats should retake the House in 2012, and it will be miraculous. I'm with David from Maine on this one. New York's 26th district is a bit early to be celebrating. But if by some miracle the House should be back in Democratic hands in 2012 and Nancy Pelosi's the Speaker again in January 2013, it will be back in Republican hands in 2014. And John Boehner, or probably Eric Cantor, really, will have the gavel in his hands in January 2015. That is where the empire is now, Susan. The American people don't do, if they ever did, certainly not now, the American people don't do nuance. They don't do analysis. They don't do anything except, I hate them all. Because Congress now has the same low, rotten numbers as Congress had 2 years ago, as Congress had 4 years ago, as Congress had 6 years ago. Congress is despised. But the weird part of that is, if you ask generally, about Congress, someone will say, Congress, you know, they're worthless. And then you ask them, well, what about your congressman? Well, my congressman's one of the good ones.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a pretty picture. But and the reason the pendulum will keep, and at this point it's swinging like something in hurricane force winds.
Yeah, that's the truth.
The reason it's doing so is because the Congress itself is hamstrung by its own rules. Largely hamstrung by the stodgy dysfunction of the United States Senate, and nothing can get done.
Exactly.
And the thing is, nothing getting done is just fine by the people who are profiting by the status quo ante.
And I really wish that normally I'm fairly satisfied with my senators, but I have to tell you, I was really disappointed when Wyden went against Merkley's motion to change the rules of the Senate. I was severely disappointed because, you know, let's face it, Merkley comes in as a freshman senator and he sees the one thing that needs to be done: change the filibuster rule.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, the United States functioned reasonably well with that filibuster rule in place. Because the Senate still did its business, and it was understood that the filibuster was something to be used only in times of extreme seriousness. Now, here we sit in an America where the president has nominated a perfectly vanilla, utterly bland, benign the Secretary of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? No better nor worse than any Secretary of Commerce in recent memory. Guess what?
They're going to filibuster him.
He's not going to get confirmed. Because 44 Republican senators have said that they won't let Barack Obama nominate a godforsaken garbage man to sweep out the White House until he does A, B, C, and D. And here's the fun part for Barack Obama, Susan, is that as soon as he has capitulated and done ABCD, chinless Mitch McConnell will stand up and say, "Oh, we're sorry about that, Mr. President. We forgot about E, F, G, H, I, J, and K, MF-er."
Yeah. I have one more thing to say.
Sure.
Is it just me, or does Mitch McConnell have eyes that look like sharks?
Well, no, he's a turtle. He's a turtle.
No, but his eyes, they look to me like a shark's eyes.
See, I look at him and it's turtles all the way down.
Look at his eyes, Wayne.
Well, yeah, see, those are the kind of eyes I look at.
He's got the eyes of a great white.
See, I think, if anything, he has the eyes of a pole in China. And the rest of his face is pure turtle. My apologies to the turtles.
Yeah. Stephanie calls him Yerbal, the turtle. which, you know, let's say it fits him.
Yerbal wasn't nearly as loathsome as he is, though, was he?
No. I still cannot understand Eric Cantor. I will never understand him.
Well, if you want to understand Eric Cantor, just leave Britney alone. He's a Britney Spears fan.
You're kidding me.
No, don't you remember that? Refused to go to an important congressional session or some such because he had box seat tickets for Britney Spears in D.C.?
I could say something to that, but I won't.
That's why forever since, he's been Eric Leave Britney Alone Cantor for me.
No, I'm just not gonna say it. It would not be nice. I will try to be nice. I do not consider him a nice person, but I'm going to consider my own karma. And I really, really hope somebody reminds this dude that karma can be a bitch.
He doesn't believe in it. They don't believe in any of that stuff. They believe in two things. Money and power. Okay, they believe in three things. God, I'm turning into a Monty Python sketch now. Money, power, and money, power, and party.
Yeah. Oh, and I did.
And party first.
I wanted to mention that I got a link to a video that showed our very own Betsy, blogger Betsy, and she was walking for the first time
unassisted
in 11 years.
Yes.
And it was very, way cool.
We're hoping, I saw in the chat room where she says that she's going to the doctor to find out if the fusion fused the proper, appropriately fusible. Or fusacious. So, yeah, Betsy's up, walked unassisted. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I'm in the process of going down the tube. She's in the process of getting up and running, I guess, things balance.
Well, I think you can be doing some getting better too. We all keep great hopes for that. Susan, you have a wonderful evening, dear.
Give my love to Agnes and the kids.
Sure will.
And can you shoot me a copy of your schedule? Because
I realized in the last few nights of reeling that off, I probably need to write that down.
Yeah, you probably need to write that down and send it to me so I can post it.
I will try to remember to do that right after the show.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Susan. I appreciate you reminding me. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
What we need is a progressive boot camp. That's what we need.
You may be right, David.
To toughen up progressives? I mean, there's a chance to make and if people want to make a profit at it as well, there's a chance you could make some money at it, too. If someone was to set up a boot camp, I'll say this for people who play an emotional card with the Republicans and who are going to start
like the lady in the documentary last night who just cried when the fundamentalist was mean to her.
Yeah, and I saw an example of that when Norman Finkelstein was when he was talking about Israel, and he was talking about the border lines, and he was talking about Gaza. He was talking about all of the problems concerning that, and there was and she couldn't control them. And she started bobbing. But she,
hey, David.
Yeah.
You're breaking up something fierce.
I'm breaking up something fierce. Oh.
Which means that somebody is on the bandwidth, probably. Which means that I need to go outside the studio and yell. Give me a little sample. Let me see if you're still breaking up. Yeah, you're still breaking up. Okay, so try back. Or I tell you what, let me just put you on hold, and I'm going to take a little break and find out where my bandwidth is going. This is two nights in a row. You know, God, it gets so frustrating, David. All right, stand by, okay?
All right.
Okay, so David's back on hold, and I hate it when this happens. It drives me batty. Let me, staying with the musical theme we established earlier in the evening. By the way, all these songs come from Moving Mountains, Voices of Appalachia. Probably you can still find it out there if you just look for it. I'm going to run a couple of tracks from that while I make a couple of phone calls and do some power swearing. Okay, stand by, y'all. This is The Horn. We'll be right back.
Well, I hear a great singing in these hills, in the night, throwing up his drills, with a hooty owl and a whippoorwill, like a nightjar without wings. I look around me, it's so sad, the ravenous American dream gone mad. One guitar was all I had, and just one song to sing, and I would sing a song. For the mother of us all, for are we all not brothers on this blue green spinning ball? You know that mother loves you, if your hands and your voices do. Let's sing a song for mother, it's the least that we can do. Back is broken for its cold. Catch sugar rivers in for gold, where the crap sugar's lousy fair. But what about our future sons and daughters, blood kin everyone? After mothers turned and gone, because nobody cares. Don't you turn your back on your mother, don't you look the other way. For everything that's broken, you know someone has to pay. You know that mother loves you, do what loving children do. Try and help save your mother before her days are through. Nothing new beneath the sun. why make mother pay? So let's give a gift to mother, so she'll know we really are the loving sons and daughters that she always knew we were. You know that mother loves you, and now it's time to show the love you hold for your mother before her time to go.
Well, good news. Problem solved. Yeah. Problem solved. So let's see if this is all working correctly again. You there, David?
Yes.
And you're not breaking up. Beautiful, huh?
Well, that's good. I'm glad you have the technical expertise to solve that.
It's really not technical expertise. It's called going to your teenage daughter's bedroom and saying, "Stop watching movies during the show."
You mean trailers?
Trailers.
Yeah.
No. I mean, we've got a Netflix connection.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is not the time to be watching Twilight.
But speaking of movies, I was going to mention this because you mentioned Mongolia, and I thought it would be a good time to mention this. Remember the Russian trailer that I sent you on the Life of Khan?
Yes.
Well, they're filming part two.
Oh, I went and found that, and what a monumental film that was, David.
Yeah, I mean, this guy is seriously, for those people who don't know, It's a trilogy film. This Russian director's filming, and he's working on movie two, and he's been working on it since 2005. So you can imagine this is going to take like, I don't know. It'll probably be done like in 2018, and it's on the life of Mongolian's great Khan.
Temujin.
Yes, and it's really a fascinating pictorial. It's gotten all kinds of acclaim and awards, and the guy who plays Khan is just brilliant in it.
Yeah, that's the neat thing about great acting. Great acting can even be great without subtitles, or with subtitles.
Yeah. I think, you know, this is something that is really, really common in a lot of areas, but I think Russian cinema gets slighted in a lot of ways because we put such an emphasis on French cinema. But to me, I mean, there's so many awesome directors from Russia.
Oh, my God. The seminal film that established just about everything that is great in cinematography is a Russian film. It's Sergei Eisenstein's Battleship Potemkin, which apparently has been re-released, or I guess some restoration work has been done with it. And it is, I am told, breathtaking.
I'm definitely going to have to check that out. Yeah, so for people who haven't checked it out, you want to check out the Khan film. I think it came out in 2007, 2008, sometime around there.
Yeah, and you know what? It's as far as depictions of Genghis Khan are concerned,
yeah.
I have to say that it is miles and miles beyond and above John Wayne. Because you do remember, or you do know, don't you, David, that John Wayne played Genghis Khan?
Did he?
Oh,
I missed that.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but what Maureen O'Hara played his chief wife or something. But you know, no, John Wayne really, really did play Genghis Khan. If you want a good giggle,
I mean,
it's
have to check that out.
It's not Plan 9 from Outer Space bad, but it's bad.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna have to.
Well, listen up, Pilgrim Horde. We're gonna conquer Asia. You know, please.
Yeah. But getting back to what I was...
No, a progressive boot camp.
Yeah, progressive boot camp. That definitely needs to happen. And the reason why I came across thinking this is because I've been watching this documentary series on the Miami Mega Jail System. And one of the things that they do is they talk about how they get 30 recruits from jail every month, and they put them through the 6-month training period, and it's really, really rigorous. And one of the things they said that really is sticking with me is they say, you can't show any sign that this is acting. You have to be seriously, otherwise you have to be completely serious or they're going to lose you. And he said, and they will lose you fast. And he said, that's why, he goes, that's why we're so hard on them. He goes, people don't understand, coming from the inner cities, from outside of the inner cities, they don't understand that. And he goes, that's how fast you lose someone. And if it looks like we're being tough on someone, if it looks like we're really, really, it's unnecessary, because you got to remember what some of these people's track records are. And they were showing people, you know, they were showing kids that were like 14 years old, 14 years old, in jail, and they were throwing him out because he wasn't willing to go through the program. Then they showed the other side, success. But what I'm getting at is we have lost an amount of discipline. We need to put a lot of that West Point type culture back into progressives. And there needs to
Did we ever have it?
I don't think we, you know what?
I think that kind of West Point authoritarianism is actually antithetical to everything it is to be liberal and progressive or whatever. And that's what makes our job so difficult. Because where the right wing the right wing machine knows that it can send out its blast faxes at 5 a.m. or blast emails now. See, I'm still trapped in the 90s fax machine. Who faxes anymore, for God's sakes?
Yeah.
They send that message out, and they know that it will go swirling around the right wing atmosphere all day long until they tell them to switch to something else, and that everybody who hears that will then repeat it in loyal lockstep fashion. And it's right. because the right wing is essentially fascist in nature, David, that they're able to do that, but we're not. You know,
liars, as you can see with the case of what's happening, the fact that CNN is letting that right-wing operative Breitbart back on again. And, you know, if...
I mean, when... Right. When... What has to happen before Andrew Breitbart is completely... I mean, because he already has been completely, totally, absolutely, utterly discredited. And James O'Keefe, that little freak... That guy's got a, he's had a ruling on his 501c3 application. I don't know if you knew this or not.
And you know,
there's been a ruling on James O'Keefe's the 501c3 application. I got an email about it the other day. Wow. And it's been granted.
Oh yeah, I read about that.
Nonprofit status has been granted to James O'Keefe, the guy who made the Acorn video. Which couldn't have been more politically partisan.
You know what I think's happening? I'm wondering if CNN and MSNBC had a serious campaign of do not bring Breitbart on your program. He has been discredited. He's a manipulator. He's a liar. And nobody on the Democratic and liberal side can do it. So why is it a conservative and Republican can do it?
I hate to be simplistic, but, you know, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R.
Yeah,
I mean,
I understand
we expect Republicans to lie, because that's what they do.
Yeah, I understand.
I mean, if you said we can't have any lying Republicans on the program, well, damn, most of the 24-hour news the channels would be nothing more than the old test pattern with the Indian chief in the middle.
And that goes to a broader point. The people that claim to be journalists and the people that a lot of people are putting YouTube clips together and saying, this is a great story, they're really just disingenuous hacks.
Well, I don't know if, I don't know if you saw it. I don't even know if we tweeted each other or not. But, you know, I was watching something earlier today and just saw footage of the Willard Romney, former Massachusetts Governor Willard Romney.
Right.
And it was something, somebody was asking, well, if you were to grade Barack Obama, what grade would you give him? You know, why not do the Barbara Walters and ask him if he was a twee, what kind of twee would he be? You know, that's no more, there's no journalism involved in either one. But anyway, in the course of watching that, David, I asked myself the question. Now, when I was talking about the Mongolian coal story,
mm-hmm.
inside the New York Times story, they had to explain The guy who got dragged to death 500 feet by some coal thugs, they were only referring to him as Megrin because because many Mongolians go by only one name. And I snarkily, jokingly said, that's why it doesn't say Mr. Megrin. Because the New York Times is real snotty about that. Give me some guy with one name. Or one woman. They will refer to Lady Gaga as Ms. Gaga. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Because they've got to be appropriate. So they had to explain in the heart of that heart-wrenching story that they were referring to this guy as Megrin because many Mongolians go by only one name. Well, why in the name of Jesus, then, does the for-profit media not... because this would be the appropriate New York Times style book manual reference. The way you refer to Romney is former Massachusetts Governor Willard, quote marks, Mitt, close quotes, Romney. Why don't they do that? Do you understand what I'm asking here in the context of what you're talking about?
Yeah, I understand completely. And, it brings it to a broader point. And it goes back to what I was telling you about. This is going to have to be a serious...
It's like referring to Meatloaf in an article and calling him Mr. Loaf. You know, the New York Times would do that, but they can't be brought to refer to this man by his kind of unsavory first name, because maybe that would make people think of that movie about rats, or maybe that would make people think about Wilford Brimley.
You know, we'll be in a bad place when they abbreviate Mitt Romney's name, they start calling him M-Rom.
That's good.
But I don't want to say that again because that might go in the universe.
Well, no, I want that into the universe because that just reminds us so much of Enron. Call him M-Rom.
M-Rom, yeah.
And we could make him a logo with the M sideways. ROM, M-Rom.
But you know, politics are getting so toxic in this country, and getting to what Susan was saying, and Susan, this is the reason why a lot of our citizens, and this goes back to, again, tying what I was telling you about, how we need a rigorous boot camp, and this is how this is going to be years and years and even decades to get out of this mire, is that when you look at the political landscape of what we're at right now, and you see how the Democrats, now let's stop pretending, you don't think they know that the Republicans are going to cave in on the debt ceiling? So then you have to start putting two and two together and realizing, well, I think the Democrats, they are for a lot of the things that the Republicans want.
Well, a lot of them are. I mean, when I was listening to Bobby Kennedy talk to the Morning Joe crew, this morning, he pointed out, he said, you know, Barack Obama's got a lot of stuff that he wants to get done, and 22 of the senators are from coal states, and half of those are supposedly Democrats. So, you know, my government's bought off, the Kentucky government's bought off, Virginia government's bought off, Tennessee not so much, oddly enough, as weirdly Republican as that legislature is.
And what they're doing everybody said, that'll never happen. And what they're doing to Maine in the school system is just insane and ridiculous. And a lot of people, you know what it is? It's a shock and awe campaign. You know, Susan was talking about, well, how can they get away with this? Here's the point. The point is, a lot of them aren't going to get away with it. But when you play the probability odds, like you said, when you were talking about the Senate, the Congress, and all of that, you think how many Democrats are retiring, ladies and gentlemen? The Republicans know what they're doing. That's what I'm telling you. This is an odds game, and it's in their favor.
They're counting cards.
Exactly, they're counting cards. And meanwhile, a lot of the progressives and liberals, what happens is, is they get so excited about what I would call a red meat story, where a Republican loses it, or someone just completely is unseated. And they think that this is like the sign of the end. Well, this is a sign of a big finale or a breaking.
Well, listen, the reason that there's nobody of any real consequence running for president in 2012, nor will there be,
yeah,
is because that is not the Republican plan, David.
Oh, I agree.
The Republican plan is to hang on to the House because they know. I mean, they know that they've got the House is going to be very hard to overturn because a lot of those seats are hardcore right-wing fundamentalist the snake handler types from states that are never, ever, ever going to vote for another blue dog again. You know, why would you vote for an imitation when you can just vote for the real strychnine swigging thing? And there's not a chance of building, unless there's, you know, some sort of, Howard Dean gets back in control of the DNC. There's not a chance of building any kind of progressive or liberal base structure to support the liberals who are already working their asses off in your Mississippis, Alabamas, Louisianas, Arkansas, Tennessees, Georgias, etc. So that the Republican Party understands they really do have a safe, solid South. And as a consequence, they know that that they can focus on tight races elsewhere, and they'll hang on to the House, which means, in turn, that they can focus on the Senate. And you know what they'd love more than anything else in 2012? Okay, so Barack Obama gets reelected. Big damn deal. Because a Republican House and a Republican Senate, the best that you can hope for is that Barack Obama will suddenly find his veto pen and veto all the hateful crap that will come down the pike. Because like I said the other night, you know, they've run this Medicare flag up the pole, and not many people saluted it. But they've got between now and 2012 and then until 2014 to make people eat it and smile.
Oh, I mean, they will connect it to the fact of the economy is doing bad. That's why the economy is doing bad is because of we passed the Medicare bill. I mean, they're already connecting all of the dots together.
Right, and consider a Republican Senate. A Republican Senate majority leader like, say, Mitch McConnell is not going to be some candy-coated marshmallow like Harry Reid is. He will whip them into shape. He will waste no time in eliminating the filibuster. And then, if he's got the right numbers, well, it won't take a 60-vote majority to get anything through the Senate. The Senate will get crap done under the Republicans. And then, here's the fun part, even if Barack Obama finds his veto pen, guess what? Vetoes can be overridden. And write this down. What is it? The 31st of May. Write this down, David. Everybody, write this down. This is why they do not need the White House. They want the Congress, and they want veto-proof majorities, and they want a neutered Democrat sitting powerless in the White House. While we're all sitting here wondering, who's going to, is Sarah going to run? Well, shit the bed. They don't care if Sarah runs. Because they want the Congress, and they want the House, they want veto-proof majorities, and they want nothing more than to absolutely make Barack Obama eat it and smile.
And they want to continue making the Democrats into the Washington Generals.
To the extent that we're not already, yes.
Yes, I mean for another decade.
Yeah, Metal Ark Lemon just holding out that basketball for Harry Reid and flipping it to his other hand when Harry reaches for it. And, oh, it's pathetic.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I definitely think, just to end this on something that when I was watching on that program, the Miami Mega Jail documentary series, Louis Theroux was asking one of the inmates who was a gang member, like, why he was so vicious in the jail cell. He built a shank, and he had stabbed a prisoner, and Louis couldn't understand it. And the jail member looks at him, he says to him, you haven't been in here, and you don't understand this mentality. He goes, but if it wasn't me, it was going to be me. And then he says something that's going to stick with me for, like, forever. He said, gabos. And Louis said, what? He said, gabos. The game ain't built on sympathy.
Oh, mother. Hey, by the way, just got this in from your fellow member of the David fraternity, You know, Delta, Delta, David. David in Tennessee just reminded me of something. Add this on to what we wrote down.
Right.
Under the subject line, counting cards. Don't forget that all the red states that gained population are going to be redistricted by Republican-dominated legislatures. The old guard Democratic states have lost population while the red states have gained. What is it, asks David. Something like a minimum of 12 Republican congressional seats will literally be created out of thin air by these bastards.
Oh, man. And
how's that for the ice-cold aqua velva on a freshly shaved face?
It goes back to, you know, what Reverba was saying, make it personal. They want it all, and I will add Gabos.
Gabos, and we refuse to be well-chumped.
At least we do. And with that, I will leave you. And for those people who want to check out the film, just send Bob a link, and I'll send you the director's name, and you can look at it for yourself on the con picture, which I urge everyone to check
absolutely,
out.
Absolutely, absolutely. Gabos, game ain't built on sympathy.
Yep.
I think that's better than Stump Liquor Bunch.
But you know what? I mean, that's brutal truth for people.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Absolutely.
All right, Bob. See you later.
All right. See you, David. Take care. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. And just to update you, We have 10 slots in the Thrifty 250 filled this evening. That means, it's dropped by 10. The job is that much less difficult. If we all kick in, we can at least get close to finishing out May in the good with a very sort of spooky and scary June facing the horn. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so, I can't pronounce his name, but that guy who shot that Oscar Grant.
Yeah.
He'll be out of jail tomorrow, so I guess that's it. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, okay, you know, he's going free after serving 11 months of a 2-year sentence. But it's just like, you know, that dude was immobilized and on his face. And he was shot in the back, point blank, killed.
Yeah.
And he claimed it was an accident. You don't mistake a gun for a taser. I know this is an old story, but it's still shocking that how brown people are just taken out around the world and right here in California. It's just sort of like 11 months. You can have a crack rock and serve more time.
Oh, you can, no, you can, accidentally kill livestock in West Virginia and at least do a year.
Well, I'm just saying, it's just like, I accidentally robbed a bank yesterday.
Can I do 11 months and then dig up the cash and move on?
I mean, it's just, I don't know. I just sort of, I thought he was going to do at least a half a decade. I didn't realize it was up, and he's out. And it's just like, okie-dokie.
Yeah, meant to fire his mistook his taser for a gun.
No. Yes, bullshit.
I mean, that's like that old psychology book about the man who mistook his wife for a hat.
Okay.
No, I mean, you just don't. I mean, tasers, no.
Right. I mean, it's just, you know, anyway, I just wonder what sort of, because they have a couple of pretty nasty riot-type events, let's call them that, around this case in Oakland. So I just wonder, you know.
I mean, how does a jury get involuntary manslaughter out of that? Because that's one of the most disturbing things out of that case is the fact that they were instructed, and it happens in murder cases, on murder one, murder two, voluntary and involuntary.
No, but they made a point of running this poor dead kid. They just ran his whole reputation. I mean, it was terrible what they said about this man who was a father of a little 2-year-old and a apprentice butcher. You know what I'm saying? That's what he was. He was a perfectly reasonable, hardworking young man with a child, and they just sort of, I don't know what, they blackened it up and, you know, just lied about this kid. And somehow that rubbed off on a jury, I guess. I mean, I really don't know, or if it's just living while black. I have no idea.
Well, I think you're probably right.
But anyway, it's, you know, it's disgusting. You know, even if this, yeah, I'm not, I'm just sort of, it's so tedious. It's 2011. You know, and you
still, and it's still going on.
And you still can't walk into a court, you know, and assume you're going to get some sort of justice, you know, if you're the wrong color. It's still happening. Anyway, I just saw the headline. I just thought, oh, you got to be kidding me. The other thing that was bugging me was, did you, apparently Sefco were sort of just slaughtered in Yemen. That place is, like, sort of out of control.
The ceasefire fell apart, and it broke all game on real quick.
Well, yeah, I mean, 70 people, you know, and then there's airstrikes. I mean, the whole idea of, like, the it's so outrageous, these people bombing.
Well, how nervous do you think the royal and exalted heads of the Saudi Arabian throne are feeling about now? Because, you know, they're neighbors. And that stuff is going to be real easy to spill over out of Yemen. I mean, have you seen that Saudi Arabia is coming under? Have you seen what they're coming unglued over?
Oh no, what?
They have but they have significant civil disobedience in the kingdom now, Sandra, because women are getting uppity and wanting to drive cars.
Oh yeah, I saw that was going on. I mean, are they like beating women in public for doing that, or what?
Yeah, and imprisoning and shutting down dissent. And I read this thing the other day about it was a survey of Saudi press, you know, because it's a captive pet press, right? Of people writing about, well, of course women don't need to drive. This isn't a democracy. And one woman saying, well, I don't want to drive. You know, in those vile Western countries, everybody has to drive. I'm chauffeured wherever I go. Not driving makes me feel like a princess. And this is, no, really, I mean, I'm not being facetious, Sandra. This is scaring the daylights out of Saudi Arabia.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can't even wrap my head around, you know, how repressive, oppressive, and dehumanizing that place is for women. I mean, you can't drive. You're a princess because you can't drive.
Yeah.
Right.
And
you know.
And the thing is, you know, here in the West, or especially in the United States, where we have such domestic violence problems, you know, everybody, no matter how hard you've tried, at some point you've seen some drunken dude in a tank top T-shirt with a bottle of Bud between two fingers out there, and the woman saying, "Officer, he promised he'd be good and wouldn't beat me no more, and he's going to stop drinking." Well, they're beating the hell out of their women in Saudi Arabia, and they don't even have the excuse of being loaded. They're doing it sober.
Right, I mean, if you're a woman, you're just an appendage, and whatever happens, it happens. I mean, it's just horrifying.
And if the stuff in Yemen begins to sort of migrate, it's going to get big ugly.
Yeah, I mean, the Saudis, I mean, they're so despicable. Did you catch that guy? I mean, I guess they reported it on your top of the hour thing, talking about, oh, we want to keep oil prices a little bit low because we don't want anyone to.
We don't want you jerks out there trying to develop renewable energy.
Right. I mean, everything is just right up front now. They don't give a F. But the other thing about that report, I didn't know if I heard right. Did that Sarah Palin say she loved emissions?
She loves the smell of emissions.
Oh, God. I mean.
Well, I know where I went immediately on that, and I'll bet you did, too. It was straight, because they ran it over the weekend on AMC. It was straight out of Apocalypse Now. I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It smells like victory.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, I didn't really know what the context was, except for...
Well, you know, she's in there amongst a bunch of motorcycles, and she's breathing exhaust.
But it's, I mean, yeah, but it's just beyond the beyond. Stupid. Oh, anyway, but, I mean, is that your latest theory now, that the Republicans are just... trying to get both houses?
Oh, my God. Do I even qualify to have theories, Sandra?
Okay, well, no, but...
But, I mean, that just... No, it makes sense to me.
But, sorry, yeah, but and the way they can do that, too, is because of the Citizens United. If they, you know, if they can get enough of those people to throw enough money at it, I guess they could.
Right, and they mount a presidential campaign that looks like they're serious, only they're not. And, you know, some clown goes around the country for a year whipping up the mouth breathers.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think that would be, I think it would be quite difficult for them at this point to get, veto-proof, numbers in both chambers, though.
Well, I bet you they could get one in the House.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I say
that not because they're going to gain... in 2012, Sandra, but because there will always be some sleazy mugwump right-wing Democrat who will vote with them because Jesus told me to.
Well, no, there's that, and there's also the sort of, you know, I've been sort of watching the voting shenanigans, and this sort of massive attempt to prevent people from voting is something else that may aid their efforts in that regard. That's more of a worry to me, is disenfranchising, you know, up to 20% of different groups.
And you add the two together, and bingo, ice cream.
Right. So, and there's also, but that also puts, you know, the Obama candidacy at risk. I mean, the slam dunk. I mean, I think the Bin Laden bump is already gone because we're back at the lowest housing cost, you know, in the economy. And I may be wrong, but I bet on Friday the jobs report is not going to be any good shakes.
Oh no!
And so, you know, ain't nobody going to be thinking about no damn Bin Laden if they still can't get jobs, and you know. And that's what things that he was coming down. Anyway, I don't, you know, so I'm not saying that he's not going to get reelected, but I don't, if there's no coattails, yeah, he might as well not get reelected. I hear what you're saying by that.
Well, lest I be misunderstood, Sandra, I think the Republicans would take great joy for all the reasons that surround their weird racial politics and their divisiveness and the sick hate that flows just under the slimy, greasy, oily surface of their reality. I think they would take great joy in having Barack Obama sit in the White House utterly emasculated.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really, I don't know. I mean, it's really hard.
I mean, I'll go ahead and say this. I may get in trouble. It is the ultimate political lynching.
Yeah, I mean, just like I said, I don't know if the, you know, I think that the Republicans are pretty toxic, at least right now. I see a lot of people, the sort of vault, the prize independence, I don't really see them rushing to vote for the Republicans, to be honest, Bob. I'm not seeing what they're bringing to the table.
Well, I'm not suggesting, I'm just saying that they have, for instance, a solid South and a solid West. I mean, nothing's going to change in Idaho. Nothing's going to change in Texas. Nothing's going to change in the Confederacy. And so they know that they don't have to worry about that so that they can go on attack against any place that there is a relevant, realistic challenge.
Yeah, I guess.
And those redistributions really, you know, 12 more seats? Oh, that's going to be great.
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, I think that certainly the Congress, I mean, who knows? I was looking at their antics today with that sort of fake ceiling.
Yeah, the phony vote on the debt ceiling.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, the reports that were out that they alerted Wall Street to tell them government for the rich and by the rich. It really is just out there now. So I don't...
Yeah, full-on straight-up oligarchy, right?
Yeah, and also, oh, we don't want to spook the bond markets. And it's just like, oh, no. And they were talking about, don't you remember the split screen? I guess they're talking about with the TARP thing. You know, the first round,
yeah.
Congress voted no, and they had the split screen. You saw the Dow drop 700 points in a minute or something like that, right? And it's just, I don't know.
Well, they're going to ride this as hard as they can, and no matter what Barack Obama does, it will be his fault. And in the meantime, I mean, really, even if there's no veto-proof majority in the Congress, Sandra, if they get hold of the Senate, can he really just spend 4 years vetoing stuff?
I don't know. You know, I'm scared of the prospect, not so much of the Republicans, but it may be, you know, oh, well, I guess now I can, you know, destroy the rest of the safety net along with Clinton.
And then, you know, and then you get, say about 2014, maybe, my fellow Americans, we have to get serious about the debt. I mean, you know where the speech is. I mean, you know how that goes, right? Because with Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer and, you know, everything's on the table. You know, Granny's on the table. Well, no, Granny's not on the table. Granny's on the menu.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to be just, you know, some nattering nabob of negativity, but this is frightening. And especially if you crawl around in their heads and try to think like they do for a little bit, it's almost enough to induce a need for the psychotropic medications.
Well, where is that Eric Cantor from? Do you know?
Yeah, he's from Alexandria, Virginia.
Okay, because I was listening to him talk, and, you know, of course I recoiled. I didn't realize where he was from, but it was just, oh, he's just horrible.
He's pure Beltway.
Yeah, no, but the sort of telling people who have been, like, annihilated, well, we can't really help you unless we cut somewhere else. I mean, is that the kind of country we've become? It's stunning.
Yeah, well, it's
why,
like, it's like
not being challenged on that, because it's just an outrage. Where was Obama talking about, you know, attacking that comment, saying that, you know, no, we can do better than that at least? There was no response to Cantor, right? Or did I miss?
No, not to speak of. And it's like that line that that throwaway line that Brad Friedman had in his Green News report, Sandra, where he said, "Way to show some of that can-do American know-how, Germany."
Right. Okay. Well, I didn't catch that, but that's funny, and that is exactly what's going on. And speaking of Germany. Yeah, I guess they just decided, yikes, no more nuclear energy by...
Right, well, they figure they got lucky at the end of the Second World War and didn't get their ass bombed.
Well, no.
And so they're not going to bomb themselves.
Didn't they have like 100,000 people out on the street right quick, though?
Yeah, no, lickety-split.
You know.
But the thing is, we could have 100,000 people in the street, and Sandra, it wouldn't matter. Germany has Germany and you know, many European nations actually have something resembling a responsive government. You know, last night you mentioned Spain's in a spot, and the spot that they're in has a lot to do with the thousands of people taking to the town squares there.
But you don't have citizens united in every European country. In fact, I think most of that is barred, you know.
Yeah.
In England, you can only run ads 60 days before the election, or 30 days or something.
And their whole election cycle is 6 weeks long.
Right. And so, I mean, it's just kind of, anyway, yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
No, it's real easy to kind of look up every now and then, Sandra, and go, you know what, we're just screwed.
Yeah, well, I don't want to go that route.
I don't either.
I feel negative enough as is, but it's just really, it is a bit demoralizing. And one other little thing, now that, Fukushima is leaking oil. Do you hear about that?
Yep.
Hello? Oh, my God. Anyway, I'm not even...
Oh, one last little economic tidbit to throw your way that you're going to get a giggle out of. There is a lot, and it's not something many people would follow just because it's not way up on the radar, but it's worth paying attention to. There is apparently a lot of back channel, sort of under the radar, talking going on between us and Cuba. And there are some people out there saying that the embargo may finally be at an end. Care to guess why?
Yeah, that's my name. Yeah, well, I know a couple of years ago, Cuban, they have like a huge oil reserve that they may have...
Destroyed. Toaster!
Oh! Shut the hell up. I'm telling you, I remember reading about that a couple of years ago. I thought, damn, that's interesting.
60 miles from Florida, off the northern coast of Cuba, billions of gallons of oil.
Right. No. I remember, like I said, I read that article and the Economist it was in, and I thought, well, this is damn interesting.
So, you know, for anybody who can go there, if you have an interest in Cuba, if you have an interest in Cuban cigars, Cuban rum, Cuban music, Cuban culture, examining the Cuban healthcare system, go now. Because if the embargo ends, it's all gone. Because what? Come on, Sandra, what's going to go first? That universal single-payer health care is gone.
Well, I mean, it depends on, you know, I don't know.
Well, I may have spoken too soon, yeah.
I mean, I understand what you're saying, but it may be to Cuba's benefit if they can manage it, right? Shit.
Whip up a good free trade agreement. What would this be? The CUIFTA, Cuban International Free Trade Agreement.
No. Trust me, if they don't have some... I mean, when I read the article, they were already in talks with Canada and some Europe and Norway all about this oil thing. That was way back then. So I would think they would have these bilateral agreements on paper. So if all of a sudden the U.S. lifts the embargo, yeah, I think you're right. We're going to see Exxon and whoever else in the front of the line, or Uncle Sam will help them out. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Look.
Finally invade after all these decades.
Yeah, a little welfare, going to liberate them. Operation Indigenous Liberation, that's what we'll call it. Operation Indigenous Liberation. It'll spell oil, just like Operation Iraqi Liberation spelled oil.
Well, no, but Fidel's brother, see, I don't know his name.
Raul,
right. So, but isn't, you know, him and Hugo, I mean, you can see some very interesting relationships developing that's not Cuba and the U.S. So we'll see about that. The oil discovery, though, yeah. Where'd you read this? I hadn't really seen any more news about that.
Where did I see it?
I don't mean about the oil. I mean about the embargo or the back channel chit-chat.
Well, truth be told, I follow a couple of Cuban cigar forums, Sandra.
Okay, well, now listen. You can get information on all sorts of forums. Another thing that's interesting, if you can tie into it, was that bastard that kicked off in Florida. The hijacker, he recently,
yeah,
you know, left the earth. I mean, you know, that could pave the way for some alterations in the relationship, too, because Cuba was not happy. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. No, and with good reason, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, I know, but I mean, and I think Obama's been making noises about, you know, trying to
maybe
the relationship.
Well, you know, the travel restrictions are being relaxed one way or the other. They already and it had happened under Clinton, and then Bush shut it back down. But there is they're expanding the travel ban to allow greater contact between the two nations for academic, journalistic, agricultural purposes. You know, where, like, we would send journalist Bob Kincaid to Cuba to study tobacco farming, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, but no, to the Obama administration's credit, that is being expanded. And one thing that works into all of this is that batshit crazy Cuban expat community down in South Florida is getting older and dying.
Well, yeah, there's that, but I mean, it is a worry. When I think about Cuba, I know I've read a couple of articles about how they are sort of in the forefront of organic food production, mainly because of how they have to circumvent the boycott. And so can you imagine
Well, you know what? If you don't have oil, if you don't have gasoline to put in your cars, you damn sure don't have it to make into fertilizers and bug sprays.
That's what I'm saying. But can you imagine who's salivating is the agribusinesses here too? Yeah, I see what you're saying.
What do you want to bet? Monsanto's out there working up a Roundup Ready papaya, or Roundup Ready breadfruit, or Roundup Ready, hell, Roundup Ready tobacco.
Yeah, no. I mean, there is a lot of pitfalls for Cuba.
That's the thing that scares me is, you know, they've got a maternal postpartum death rate that is vastly lower than ours. They've got a postpartum infant mortality rate vastly lower than ours. Their literacy rate is vastly higher than ours. And, you know, never mind missile sites and so forth in Cuba. That's something we can't tolerate because it makes us look bad.
Well, and because the U.S. is sort of losing its luster on what it can offer, i.e. freedoms, political freedoms, because as we know, our political freedoms are definitely weakened. If you know, to me, I'm thinking that this sort of Unitarian presidency has made this a post-legal society. So, you know, Cuba should be really very wary of what they're going to be getting when that embargo is lifted. So
hear, hear.
But anyway, it was something else I wanted to. Oh, right. So yeah, that was really bizarre last night on the Malloy show.
Yeah, I didn't get to hear that, and I'm trying to find out what exactly.
Well, it was somebody, I think a kid or some young person wrote to him, and he read it out loud, and the kid was talking about that he liked the callers, and they said, "Oh, Sandra from California and Susan, you know, from Oregon." I'm like, "No, ain't that the wrong show?"
Yeah. Well, you know, it all flows together after a while, I guess.
Well, I was thinking, your show is still after. Is it still being played after his?
Right, the rerun.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, anyway, it's all sort of bit trivial.
Yeah, but it's cool. You're expanding your reach.
Yeah, right. Anyway, and I was thinking, no. What I was thinking was like, oh no, some dear child, because it's not exactly children friendly. Our conversations.
There are a bunch of young folks that do listen. And that's one of the cool things about doing liberal progressive radio, Sandra, is we have a vastly younger demographic than, say, Flush and Hannity, because Bill O'Reilly's median demographic is like just got to the funeral home. Yeah, it's like 75.
Right. Oh my God.
Whereas every now and then I get these emails from young people going, you know, wow. I mean, look at Cassie.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's the same thing with the Malloy show. I'm sure the age is well represented on that show.
Well, and he even
used on up.
Once in a while, he used to do a special like Friday edition or whatever.
Oh, for the kids.
Yeah, 17 and under.
17 and under, right?
Yeah, and I always thought those were worth listening to, and I thought, you know, I'd love it if my kids were sharp enough to pull off a call to mic one of these days, and that just never happened.
Because
my 15-year-old is busy watching YouTube videos or Netflix or something in the middle of, you know, Dad's radio show.
Oh, so is that why you have problems with the broadband? Because you're sharing it in the house, right?
We have rules about using the wireless from the hours of 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. That we're gonna have a little family confab after the program, because this is two nights in a row now, and I've only been doing this for 7 years.
Yeah, you're gonna have to have a sort of a sit down.
Yeah, what we, you know, father. Right? No, what we have here is failure to communicate, and if you do it again, Daddy takes away the box. Take away the box. Yeah. So right.
Well, listen. Are you gonna be checking out that basketball game tonight?
Yeah, I will. I can't resist. You know, please.
Oh, it's just...
And, you know, you never know. Mark Cuban may come unglued in the middle of the game. That'll be fun, too.
Yeah, if you're cussing out David Stern, that'd be worth it.
Right, or, you know, throwing a hot dog at a referee. You know, he's good for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the trestle. Oh, my my God, that program is just as corrupt as can be, isn't it?
Well, I love the SI cover.
I haven't seen it.
Announcement yesterday, SI cover today. How deep did it go?
Oh, see.
I mean, this is one worth maybe picking up at the newsstand or reading online, because apparently the answer is really, really deep.
Oh, well, how the mighty have fallen. And it is quite disgusting, those kids saying, oh, yeah, they're coming back. And what are they coming back to? How horrible.
Well, it's not just the sweater vest in this one, Sandra, because it's also E. Gordon Gee, whose autograph I have on a diploma, actually. He started out as the president of West Virginia University and then went on to bigger and better things until he wound up at OSU. I can see Tressel sitting down with Gee saying, now, I know I got to leave and everything, but you don't want to totally suck next year, do you? You don't want to be Michigan under Rodriguez, do you? And Gee going, well, no, not exactly. Well, here's how it's going to go. I made them youngins promise me that they'd come back for next year. Right, Mr. President? Well, that's right, you did. Well, here's what I'm going to do. You're not going to get rid of my ass until after the NFL draft, so none of these youngins can bust out. So after the NFL draft is over, you can ditch me, and you'll still have Terrell Pryor next year. How's that sound to you? Deal. I hate the sleazy little places that my brain goes sometimes, but tell me that doesn't make sense.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, but all of it, I mean, it's just laughable because, I mean, how many years was he just touted as this, that, or another? Oh, Tressel, you know what
Well,
I mean?
Yeah, and that's what makes him so even sleazier is that, he tried to come off like a modern day or modern incarnation of Joe Paterno. When he was really nothing more than a sleazy old Clemson Danny Ford.
Oh, and another one killing me is the Dodgers. You know, they can't make payroll and all this sort of stuff.
And that's just sad. That's just sad because it's the fact that it's being torn down by a pair of bickering ex-spouses.
Yeah, just some dumbass. It's just like, really? And the other one that's killing me is there's nothing funnier than these rich fucks who are so greedy that Madoff, you know, the Mets. It's like, I can't do nothing but laugh.
I want to follow that lawsuit, Sandra.
That shit is hella funny.
I think it would be funnier than anything is if the Mets ownership actually had to pay off in one of those shareholder loss recovery suits.
Because it's an outrage. You're like, these people are so disgusting. And that's why I get back to that whole...
Well, what the hell were the Mets doing in the subprime market?
Oh, exactly. No, that's what I mean by... And that's the whole thing about Zarin's theory about the owners of the football team. That whole thing could be at play with them. The reason why they don't want to open a book is because of their dodgy-ass investments, like the rest of the rich people in this country. Anyway...
I gotta get Dave Zirin on the show one of these evenings. I just gotta.
Yeah, because he's so interesting, because he's progressive and he ties sports.
And he understands that sports is the metaphor of the nation.
Right.
And he doesn't get all, well, you know, I never watch sports while I'm, you know, because I'm drinking my Darjeeling. You know, no.
He's a fan, a big fan. So that's why it's very compelling to listen to him because he mixes the racial, the class, all of it. Everything you want to deal with in this society, you can find in sports.
Oh, by the way, I got to throw one more at you,
because
you're going to love this. Did you see the Warwick Gunn story?
No.
Okay, so last week in Atlanta, or the ATL, as they like to say, Warwick Gunn was pulled over by three Atlanta, Georgia police officers.
I don't know anything about this.
Yeah, so Warwick gets put, this is a guy who has had a noble existence inside the NFL. Runs the Warwick Gunn Family Foundation. This is a guy whose parent was a cop in Baton Rouge who was murdered. And so family means a lot to him. He's gotten the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, the Bart Starr Award, the Giant Steps Award. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution described him as a model citizen. So he gets stopped by three police officers for having Oh, you're just going to love this because you started out with the Oscar Grant story. This kind of puts a bookend on it. Warrick Dunn gets pulled over by three Atlanta police officers for having, and I quote, the characteristic of people transporting drugs and guns.
Is that black, male, and in a reasonably new car?
Pulled over outside Atlanta because he said my window tint was too dark. During the stop, he asked a lot of personal questions, said I had the characteristics of people transporting drugs and guns. So he searched my car and gave me a warning for my tint. He says, I felt violated, and I've had my car since 08, never been pulled over for tint.
Well, yeah, he was pulled over for tint, all right.
You got to it before I did.
Oh, shit, that's horrible. No, I missed that one.
Well, I'm just glad he's not dead.
Yeah, me too. Knock on wood for him. Incredible.
You know, it just...
Scary, though. Just scary, really.
Yeah, DWB.
That's really, yeah. Oh, wow, anyway. Listen, I'll let you go.
All right. Take care, Sandra.
All right. Bye.
Bye now. And for tomorrow night, crank up good and early, and we'll hit all the other blinking lights that are still blinking right now. Thanks, everybody, for chipping in. We're closer. We're not there, but about 15 slots in the Thrifty 250 filled. And that takes us back down to around the 36, 35 mark for getting May finished on time and in budget. Thanks to everybody, yes, you, who contribute to keep it going. Thank you very, very much. And thank you to everybody, your calls, your emails, your participation in the chat room. That's a fun place, the chat room, by the way. Thanks to Lottie, our chat room moderator, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. I will send Susan the schedule so you can follow it. But I'm going to say it every night until we can memorize it and say it together. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy, out there walking on her own, and we're so proud. Thanks to our op-ed correspondent, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Thank you to John Fox, our chief engineer, who has been rather busy of late, but never far away if there's a problem, even though he's in Australia. Thank you. And thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben will never send a bill, but what he does for progressive radio can never be properly expressed. He literally saved it. Do you realize that? Ben Birch saved liberal progressive radio when on his own hook and without any encouragement or financial incentive, he started White Rose Society in 2002. And that's how a lot of people got turned on to Malloy, Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, The Horn, Rick Smith, and in bygone days, Peter Godbold, Bruce Birch. It's amazing what Ben has done. WhiteRoseSociety.org. And, of course, the show comes to you every night by virtue of the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and CoalRiverWind.org. Worth checking out. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Smith is next.